Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It is the 23rd of March, 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and a pleasure to have you all with us. We really appreciate you spending time with us, as we always do. We have a lot to discuss. We will get right to it. Let me introduce the panel. I also want to welcome you to the discussion. All you have to do is write to us if you would like to share your thoughts or have a question for the group. Panel at WAMC.org is the email, the only email, actually. Panel at WAMC.org. And yes, we would love to hear from you. Okay, let me introduce the group. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning to you, Joe. It's always wonderful to say good morning to everybody who's listening to WAMC.
Indeed, it is. And a beautiful day yesterday. We'll hope for the same today. Rosemary Armeo is with us, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I'm stuffing myself on Girl Scout cookies this morning. Really, it's I can't control it. Thin mints.
Which kind?
Thin mints. Yeah.
The thin mints. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, good for you.
Every year I say, okay, I can just have two this year. It doesn't work.
No, you can't have just one. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is back with us. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me, Joe.
It's always a pleasure to have you, and we appreciate you being here. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us as well. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. It is a beautiful day. It looks like it's going to be a lot like yesterday, which was fantastic. Long time coming this spring. I hope it sticks around.
Yes, it would be very nice. But these are lovely temperatures and very nice weather. And for the first days of spring, we'll take it. All right.
Do you all remember the May snowstorm when you heard cracking of trees which had already leaved out?
Yeah.
Terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it happens, unfortunately.
It does, but we'll look forward and hope that we're through the worst of it. Groundhog be damned, I guess. So let's move on to what we have to talk about today. I'm going to start with the story out of Boulder this morning. I don't know. There isn't a tremendous amount to say other than to reflect on how horrific it is. Another shooting in this country so close to the one in Atlanta, but 10 people killed, including a police officer. A suspect is in custody. King Soopers grocery store on Monday, including where 10 people were killed, including a Boulder police officer, after a shooter opened fire on customers and responding officers. Law enforcement officials said the suspect, who carried out the attack with a rifle, was in custody, but they offered scarce details about the deadly shooting, including any information about a possible motive. The Boulder police commander said in a brief news conference that the suspect was being treated for an injury. Boulder County District Attorney Michael Dougherty said that officials were still working to notify family members of the victims. 51-year-old Boulder officer Eric Talley was among the first to respond and among those killed by the shooter.
Seven children.
Yes. And the police chief vowed that police will work night and day to complete the investigation, which she said will take no less than 5 days. And just right outside to the northwest of the city of Denver, the rampage was the latest in a long history of mass shootings in the Denver area and comes as the nation is still grappling with a devastating attack in Atlanta that left 8 people dead, including 6 Asian women, less than a week earlier. Alan.
Well, I guess we all know that it comes down to guns and how many guns there are in this gun-crazy country of ours. When you poll people, they tell you that there are too many guns, and they want sensible gun control. And yet, the gun makers, the people who are selling the guns, and we certainly have them around here, and others are adamant in protecting, quote, the right of people to have guns. Well, you see what's happening. Somebody made a point in the paper this morning that I thought was so good, which was, you know, if it didn't stop after that Connecticut shooting of those beautiful little children, it wasn't going to stop. I mean, what kind of people don't understand how important, you know, some kind of a hold on this is. It's just crazy. The country is gun crazy. Period. End of discussion for me.
Rosemary.
Yeah, everything Alan said, plus I would add the lack of real treatment options for people with mental illness. I think that's part of it. I hope that Joe Biden will make it a high priority to push through gun control legislation in the same way that he has done relief, the giant relief bill over the protests, kicking and screaming of Republicans who apparently are content to allow America to have, as we have in the past week, one mass shooting per day. It's to the point where you cannot go to school, you cannot go to buy food, you cannot live your life without the threat of being shot unexpectedly by some guy who has no motive or no discernible motive, who you don't even know. That's terrorism.
It is, absolutely, and it's just very scary because by the random nature of it. Mike Spain, I know you're familiar with that region, and
it's sad because there have been, you know, Columbine, of course, being the biggest, but then the shooting in the movie theater, in
Aurora
nearby, Aurora, and it's just become commonplace in our society. What is striking to me, you know, to Alan's point, is that, Americans want gun controls. They want background checks. They don't want easy availability to firearms. They want they're ready to accept control, but Congress just won't do it. They won't. They stand in the way. So this may be another reason for Biden to modify and the Democrats to modify the filibuster to push some of these things through that have been just getting, cut off by the Republicans in Congress who are influenced by big money from, you know, the gun industry and elsewhere. And it's just, maybe this is the time. I mean, I guess this will bring the issue to the forefront, this and last week's shootings in Atlanta. Yeah.
JP.
I agree with everything that Mike and Rosemary and Alan said, and I do think it's unfortunate that it takes these continued shootings for us to start talking about this issue again. We have Democratic control of the House of Representatives, we have Democratic control of the United States Senate, and we have President Biden in the White House, and no one is talking that there's even really a possibility of passing any gun control reforms. Last time Democrats controlled all branches of government back from 2008 to 2010 with Obama as president, they also didn't do anything then. And of course, it's Republicans that are blocking it. But Democrats also, when they're in control, for whatever reason, they're not willing to pass gun control. The last time that we passed any meaningful gun control was 30 years ago in 1994. And I hope that we New Yorkers will pressure Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, our own U.S. Senator, to take up gun control. Think about those seven kids this morning that are waking up without a dad.
You know, Alan, you talked about this, and yeah, it's just that random nature of this that you can't, you know, you can't, and Rosemary touched on that too, you can't go to school, you can't go to the grocery store, you can't go to church. All of these places that are either mundane or very meaningful and are a part of our lives have become targets, and you never know. And it is, and you wonder how you keep people, I mean, obviously there's the gun element, that's the main element, but how you keep people safe, even as the guns are out in the streets of someone walking in broad daylight with a firearm and killing so many people in such a short period of time.
You know, Joe, as long as people will have guns, and the number is in the millions, you're going to get somebody who is, frankly, mentally ill and will do something like what we have seen. You know, my question is, at what point do the American people do what they can do? In other words, if you take a poll, the American people are widely and wildly for gun control. And yet we have I'll eschew the adjective which I'm thinking right now, the Supreme Court, which made all of this happen and which has allowed this to happen. You can say, well, no, the founders made it happen. No, they didn't. Go read the Constitution again. But the interpretation was so scurrilous that until the American people say this has got to stop, and I mean really say this has got to stop. You know, we've had movements, we've had Brady, we've had you name the number of people. But until people make a demand that will be heard in Congress and scare the something out of them, it won't change. So now it's the question to me of the political will of the American people. If they want it, they can get it, but they got to really want it and they got to really say something.
We are being told by police that it's an AR-15 style rifle that was used, which is a lightweight semi-automatic rifle. AR stands for Armalite 15 design. And I know many say that it is either an assault rifle or an automatic rifle, but it is not. It is a semi-automatic rifle. And legal.
But it is an assault rifle.
It is an assault rifle.
It gets used in assaults quite often.
Absolutely. And it is also legal in many places. And legal to carry. We do not know what the situation is in this particular case, but we do know that despite bans, even in the state of Colorado, that high-capacity magazines for those AR-15, in other words, like a 60-round drum, are still readily sold within that state. So there is an issue with the guns, and there's also an issue with the ammunition. Yes.
Right. JP mentioned the last reform was back in 1994, which included the Congress included an assault rifle ban, but that expired. That made these guns available again, and Congress didn't have, you know, it was during, I think, 2002 or during the Bush administration when it came up for renewal. I mean, why would they put an expiration date on something so important? Because they knew they could get it back in if they just did nothing, and they're good at that. So, you know, I mean, there's no excuse for someone having a AR-15. I mean, it's like an AK-47. It's an assault rifle. It's meant to efficiently shoot people. It's not a hunting rifle. It just, to me, I cannot understand it.
So to make your head hurt a little bit more, a Colorado judge blocked Boulder, Colorado, from enforcing its two-year-old assault rifle ban on March 12th. So that's, a week and a few days ago, ruling it violated a 2003 state law prohibiting municipalities from enacting their own firearms regulations. Boulder City spokeswoman Shannon Alabaugh said that city attorneys would meet to decide on whether to appeal the ruling by the Boulder County District Court Judge Andrew Hartman. That according to the Denver Post. But in the meantime, the Boulder Police Department wouldn't enforce the ban on AR-15 style rifles and large capacity magazines. And this was reported, of course, last night after the shooting at the King Super. Not to say that these things won't happen if strict laws are enforced. However, you do have to wonder, as these things happen, if it will not help in passing the laws, although we have not seen that in the past.
And what's wrong with Colorado? I mean, it does seem to, you know, I've spent time there. It's a wonderful state, you know, in so many ways. And yet there's something in the air there that leads to so much of this.
Well, Colorado's the Wild West.
Yeah.
And a lot of it still is. You got that new Congress member, Boebert, you know, from Western Colorado, who's, you know, wants to carry a Glock into the floor of the House of Representatives. I mean, there's a lot of mixture of cultures out there. And one of the cultures is, you know, the old Wild West.
You know, Rosemary, I'm interested in your thoughts. We have a few minutes before we go over to a break. But this is Boulder, this ban that they decided not to renew. They enacted it right after the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida because an AR-15 was used, as it is in many mass shootings across this country. And yet, I guess I'm curious as to why you put a two-year time limit on it.
Because they don't want to limit at all. I mean, the gun control people have, the pro-gun people have been immensely successful in keeping the Second Amendment, not alive, but so active, way beyond what I believe that the founders intended. And there's no hope for a change right now. I mean, don't kid yourself. You've got a federal judiciary stuffed with Trump advocates who are Second Amendment champions, and they do not believe in gun control, just like that judge out in Colorado. And even if strong legislation is enacted, it's going to go and be challenged in courts that are very sympathetic to no controls. It's become the cult of the Second Amendment. It's sort of like evangelicals who believe in literal translation of the Bible. You can no longer think about evolution as real because it wasn't in the Bible. That's how we are with that Second Amendment. It was never intended for this purpose. And what it would take to battle it, I think, are first a legislature, the Congress, willing to expend political capital, because it will take that, and very cleverly written legislation that can get around the jurisprudence barriers that will be thrown in the way. I don't have much hope of this. I find it interesting that the one protection is to go along with the gun people and get more guns. And I find that happening in my own family, that to protect themselves, they think they need guns. So it kind of spreads the culture rather than does away with it. I don't see an end to this. It's part of my gloom and doom thing. Do you? Do any of you?
You know, it's a representative government. We elect legislators. The polls are all showing people wildly for gun control in this country. And yet those representatives who are representing us in the Congress aren't doing what we want them to. They're more interested in money. They're more interested in a minority of a minority just saying we will punish you and we'll make sure you get punished. And it's disgusting because political courage is in such short order.
We only have about 20 seconds, but I'm fascinated, too, Rosemary, about what you said, because I find this to be true, too, that the people who are concerned, even the people on the left who are so concerned about guns and so concerned about shootings, are going out and buying guns. So that is certainly a part of this culture that is it is fascinating as well as concerning. We'll take a break. We will pause there. Go ahead. 10 seconds.
I was just going to say it's a genius move. You know, you say, hey, you know, you can't beat us.
All right, we gotta go.
And we are. We really are.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. Right before the break, we were talking and looking at this idea of even people on the left who are so concerned about the gun issue that they are going out and buying guns. Rosemary, you were speaking to that right before we had to go. Well, she was, and then we lost her connection. Okay. We have letters. Let's go to those. And Rosemary will be back, and then I'll check in with her again as soon as she dials back in. Let's see. We go to this from Mike. What's the answer? Can you take the existing guns off the street? It's simply not possible. There are three times as many guns out there as American citizens. What would legislation do to prevent it? Where there's a will, there's a way for criminals. Drugs are illegal and they are rampant. Just the other day, a 4-year-old in Albany found a pistol on the street under a car and accidentally fired it. Most of them are legally owned. So what is the answer? We then go to John, who said, if you were the majority leader in the Senate, would you submit an infrastructure bill or gun control legislation? The Republicans' thoughts and prayers are sent to the 7 fatherless children. Let's see. We go to this letter from Tom. For Rosemary and others who believe likewise, ample research shows us that mental illness is not a salient risk factor in perpetrators of mass shootings. White, male, and angry are far more common risk factors among shooters, as is a history of domestic violence. It's a common refrain, but suggesting that mental illness is responsible for mass shootings serves to stigmatize mental illness and does nothing to improve gun violence. Anyone on that?
I think there's a case to be made for that. If someone's going to, you know, carry out a mass shooting, that they are mentally ill.
Me too.
I would also make the case that, you know, we have, you know, Alan, you're talking about representative government. We have a representative government right now. We have Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. We have Chuck Schumer as Majority Leader. We have Joe Biden as President. They all claim to be for gun control. They're now in power. And are any of them talking about passing gun control measures? No. You know, their calculation is, you know, this is going to, you know, the media is going to forget about this in a week, and we'll be on to the next thing. And, you know, when the next shooting happens, we'll talk about the need for gun control. But will they take action? The answer is no.
And the reason is that they can't, because they think they will lose. You know, JP, there are sometimes, as you know and as I know, to do things even if you're going to lose. Because even if you start slowly, things build up. And there's such a thing as the right thing in this country. When those little children were killed in Connecticut, just think about that. And we couldn't get anything sensible after that. It's extraordinary. And this is a time you really want some guts out of Chuck Schumer. You want some guts out of Nancy Pelosi. Really, just let's do what's right here. The American people are behind you. The power brokers may not be, but the American people are for you.
Rosemary, you are back.
I'm back. I have to disagree with that. Biden has a number of crises, not just one. And yeah, I think guns are horrible, but so is lack of any kind of controls on our climate, and so is lack of infrastructure. And our politics work in a way that you have to pay attention and set your priorities. And we saw it with Clinton, who squandered a whole lot of political effort and capital on getting across a relatively minor and very unsatisfactory ban on not a ban. How did he do it? He was trying to loosen the rules on gay people in the military. That was not smart.
I think Biden
up to now has been very right. Biden right now is being very smart. He concentrated totally on COVID because he picked that as his priority. And he now has to deal with, look at what else there is. I said climate. I said, how about the border right now, which is exploding? And in every one of these instances, we say, we have a Democratic Congress, let's go. And he can't. I think he would if he could, but you can't just go with everything all at once. And I don't know exactly how he's going to pick what comes next. I think they're also interrelated, too. That's part of it. He has to sell the message that I'm going after this, and these other things are also important. We'll take those up next and methodically plod through one thing after another, because Republicans are going to fight him every inch of the way. Even on things that seem like we all agree, and why can't we agree on it? He's not going to get that. The majority in the Senate is one vote. It's Kamala Harris. If she gets COVID, oh my God, there it goes. We have no way to push it through. And so I do think the filibuster has to go if he's going to get some of this legislation go. I understand the danger that means for the Senate, but I think it has to go, and I hope he goes for that. I don't see another path. The Congress is craven, and the courts are stacked against him right now, and there are multiple crises. That's not an easy job.
In the meantime, yes. Sorry about that. In the meantime, 10 people are dead yesterday. 8 people are dead the week before. We have a national crisis. And Rosemary, with my great, and you know this is true, my greatest respect for you, I have to tell you, I think that something has to be done now. I don't care whether it's leadership by example, I think, or whether you put some legislation up that may die, but you are in a national crisis here, and we can do it. Seven children for that policeman father. And by the way, the Shartocks are sending some money, and I hope everybody else will, too. But because this is just horrible, and we have to do something.
Did you want to respond, Rosemary?
Well, I mean, I don't even see what good money is going to do. And you live in a country where
money for the family of the officer.
Yeah. The victims.
Yeah, the victims.
The officer who died.
Yeah. I mean, not the officer. Well, no. Go ahead.
And the seven remaining
children. That's, you know, even the money they get now is not going to make up for a lifetime of being without a parent or a spouse. So it's so pitiful what we as individuals can do that I do find myself overwhelmed by it. But I do not think that Biden should veer from the course that he selected right now, which is to go after he's doing immigration and infrastructure. I think that's what he has to do, and then plot on the rest. And yes, he has to go out and act all sympathetic. He's really good at that. But, you know, we as Americans, we don't care. We have shown that over and over again. Who's the people who put those members of Congress in who refuse to submit to who's the one? It's us. It is on us. So we have accepted that little first graders are going to die in Connecticut and people buying groceries in Colorado are going to die. We are okay with that, Alan.
I don't think we're okay with it because the polls show we're not okay with it. But we are complacent, and you're right about that. And we really have to move off that dime, because at the point at which all those people who say to the pollsters, no, we have to have some sensible gun controls in this country, mean it and say we're going to start voting against Congress people who eschew these movements. I think that's the case, because we know the American people want these sensible reforms.
They tell us they want it, right? And
right.
Mike, you made that point too, and yet nothing is getting, you know, it's hard to pass. Go
there
ahead.
Is an enormous political cost that can interfere with other agendas. I think Rosemary is right. The political capital you'd have to spend right now to push something through, and it would be weakened every step of the way. It gets daunting. I'm not saying you shouldn't go for it, Alan. I'm not disagreeing with you, but the cost is very, very high if you're trying to achieve other things. It's going to be, you'll spend it there and lose getting infrastructure through, or lose an immigration bill that's fair and equitable. And this is the dilemma that every president faces, especially now, and then not to mention global warming and how many millions of people will be affected by that. But but there also can be a public campaign, and you know, Mike Bloomberg has funded some, you know, to convince people that it takes time, but it's to counter the NRA narrative and get out there and take control of the message, and then Americans will feel more compelled to move this to the front burner. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. You have to have politicians with guts, and that is sometimes lacking, but you also need somebody to lead the public opinion on this and to make it unacceptable. It's too acceptable to have a garage or a locker full of rifles and all kinds of long guns that are just way beyond what a collector might have, things that are available for use. You know, it's a bizarre fantasy that people have about owning all these firearms. And we have to change the public so that it's not acceptable. Not that I favor gun controls. No, it has to be I do not want to tolerate this kind
I
of
demand it, yeah.
weaponry
and
in our...
You, and you know, Andrew Cuomo, the greatest thing he did was his gun control efforts.
Right.
And he's really gotten quite beaten up. You see signs all over upstate
exactly.
New York.
He's still paying a political price for that. People wanted to impeach him long before the nursing home data and long before the sexual harassment allegations.
But tough nuggies.
Just because there was a limiting...
But tough nuggies!
He did the right thing.
I would say
JP?
I would say so. So what about the political price that Cuomo's paid? He accomplished something that was good for the people of his state.
Exactly.
And I would make the argument that Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, they're going to lose in 2 years anyway. You look at history, the party that has control of the White House loses seats in Congress. Chuck and Nancy are going to lose in 2 years anyway. Why not do something that is good, that's going to help people, that everybody believes it should have been done over the last 30 years? And to say that, oh, there's other priorities now. Well, there's been other priorities for 30 years, and we've had how many dozens of mass shootings, how many hundreds of people die of the senseless violence, and these seven kids that are waking up this morning without a dad, they can't hug their dad this morning because he got killed in the mass shooting. You say, you know what, kids, we've got other priorities. We've got the infrastructure bill to work on. We've got global warming to work on. Why not do something that like Alan says, everybody agrees something needs to be done. But no, we've got other priorities. You know, the media is going to be covering something else in a week. We'll move on. No, don't worry about it.
Not surprisingly, we have
They don't all agree.
No, they do not all agree.
But the polling is showing the country does agree. You're quite
polling
right.
Polling schmolling.
Wood schmud.
Polling schmolling. It's just what people say. Oh, of course we don't want the little seven children waking up dead. They're perfectly happy with those children waking up without their dad, just as they were in Connecticut. And that's why we are in this boat. And it truly is easier for Biden right now to argue, hey, we all want good roads. That is something. Even the gun nuts want good roads that can get to their supermarkets faster. So, yes, he should push through that first. He's not going to get this. He's going to spend a ton of energy, and there will be no gun control. So forget about it.
Well, wait a second. It's one thing to say, you're quite right, and I have such great respect for your for your mind here. But Rosemary, you know, the American people don't like it. They don't want it. They don't say, okay, you know, as you're implying they do. They don't. You know, this is a time to at least say we're for it. We, the Congress, the president, are for it. And by the way, JP, I have a feeling if the Democrats do the right thing on this messaging, that you're going to find people are very recalcitrant to support some of the Republicans who are completely, as Rosemary uses the word, nuts on this.
All right, we have to pause and take a break. Not surprisingly, we have a lot of letters.
I'm just getting started. You have to come back to me.
I will. I promise. We'll come back to you, and we have letters, and you can yell at them, too. It'll be great. Stay tuned. The fun and frivolity is just beginning. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. We have many, many letters, and we'll get to them. We go to Ariadne. Please stop saying that all shooters are mentally ill. Each of these white supremacists had the ability to choose not to kill. Those of us with mental health issues face enough stigmatization. We need to attack the culture that feeds these acts instead of using mental illness as an excuse. I agree with that, and I certainly understand the concern of the stigmatization. However, we know that there were mental health issues in the suspect from just last week. We know in the case, I'm just taking the low-hanging fruit here, but the case in Colorado at in Newtown shooter was also had mental illness. I mean, it is a factor. It's not an absolute, but it is a factor, and certainly should be brought into the equation, I think.
I always get beaten up, Joe, when I say this, but I think for somebody to murder somebody else indicates mental illness. I do in this society. So
I don't get mental health advocates who say who want this pure reputation. They don't want to be maligned. The truth is that we have horrible mental health facilities and treatment in this country, woefully unfunded. And if advocates could use the fact that mass shootings are sometimes tied to this, and that people who have mental illness this can hurt themselves and others. Why would they not, in order to get support for funding and for projects? I just don't understand this. You want us not to malign them in any way, and yet they are repeatedly, mental illness is repeatedly implicated in these crimes. Am I totally wrong on that? If I am, I know I'll hear from
I think you're right. But remember, we have a lot of mental health practitioners, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, and others, all of whom I have great respect for, as I do for you, Rosemary. And I got to say that as soon as they hear somebody is mentally ill, they consider that a slur on what they do for a living, which is ridiculous.
Well,
you know, it's ridiculous.
I mean, not to go after the letter writer, and I certainly don't mean that, but, you know, then in the next breath saying these are all white supremacists. I mean, that isn't the case either. It's far more complex than that. And I think we have to put all of the data in and figure out a solution. It's not easy one way or the other. Virginia, go ahead.
You know, Joe, I was delighted. I am delighted to see in the Colorado story they do not name the shooter. You know, there's a lot of copycatism that goes on here. You know, one way somebody who has a deficit in terms of self-worth can try to compensate for that, which is absurd. They go out and they do this, and they think, well, we're going to get my name in the paper and I'm going to be famous forever. So I'm delighted when I see that they are not naming the suspect.
I agree with you, Alan, and I'm glad you brought up that point, because the media does definitely play a role in this dynamic that we have in our country, that the shooter carries out these crimes and the person's face is on TV for three straight days, is on the front page of every newspaper. And I think that the media needs to have an embargo on publishing photographs of the shooter and the names of the shooter. That should be something that the media organizations do voluntarily.
Now, for an opposing point of view, we go to Rosemary Armeo.
Yeah, that's not news. We're not in advocacy work. I don't want to help them. I want to tell the story. And the story is that so-and-so with a name killed so many people. And here's his whole life story. I want to know everything about him. I think that there's material to be learned from the histories and the biographies of people who commit these crimes. I am opposed to anything that limits what we can or ought to publish. I've said the same about names of rape victims. We've turned rape into, we've helped to make that a crime that women are ashamed to admit happened to them. And that ought not to be the case. You ought to be adamantly in favor of catching and punishing the people who do you wrong. And we, the media, by making it a matter of shame, have not.
That's up to the...
You can do all that work, Rosemary, without publishing the face and the name of the person. You can do all of that stuff without putting their name and their face out there.
I have to say the alleged shooter in the Atlanta case was on television, as you said, JP, for the last 3 days. I can see his face, but I don't know his name. And the problem is that there are so many of these cases that it becomes, you know, all jumbled together, and
you forget
it so quick. I think it used to be the case because they were far rarer, and now a week doesn't go by, unfortunately. Back to the letters.
I'll give you one other. Can I give you one other
case
too? And that's with suicide. We are told as journalists,
right,
oh, there's a copycat. Don't print that it happened, because then other people will copy it. And so we do. We go along with that. And the truth is, it has not stopped teenage suicide. People find out in other ways, not from newspapers, when people close to them have committed suicide. It's ineffective. Covering up knowledge never, ever has led to reform.
But isn't that
incest, abortion, it just doesn't work.
Now, Professor Rosemary,
but wouldn't
I have
you?
Okay, Mike, go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying, but there is a right way and a wrong way to report anything, and journalists and media organizations have a responsibility not to inflame and not to sensationalize in a way that would possibly inspire people. Don't you think there's a way to do it right and a way to do it wrong?
Well, of course, Mike, as usual, says it in a way that how can you say no to that? And of course I don't. But you aren't talking about framing this in a different way or not inflaming. You're talking about suppressing information. We're not going to print the name or pictures. That's not framing it.
Professor, can I ask you a question? And that is, don't the Brits flatly prohibit any of this before the case comes to court?
They do in the UK.
Yeah, but
I bet in New Zealand,
in Canada,
we never...
all the Commonwealth.
Yeah, New Zealand has similar laws. When they had a mass killing there, we didn't see the face. It was barred by law, and you know, different societies deal with their freedoms differently. But we live in a society where we believe in the freedom of information. There's a lot to learn by looking at the life of somebody who's done this, and it can be positive in the sense that it'll help make changes.
But isn't there a case to be made, and I understand Rosemary's point, I just don't know that I agree with it, that there is a difference between of putting the name out of a suspect of a crime versus the victim, and I would add a suicide victim to that, or a rape victim.
Professor Rosemary, you yelled in the middle of it. What was it? What was it that you were objecting to there?
I've been yelling all morning, haven't I? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're a bit of a yeller. Yeah.
Is it the same because one's a victim and one is the perpetrator of a crime? No, I think it's all the same. The job of the reporter is to get out all the information. And then society and scientists who work in that society examine the material for commonalities or factors that might have contributed that we can learn from. And it just is a terrible idea to say we're not going to print names in all cases. A blanket suppression, which is what advocates that we glorify.
This is a lot more nuanced. More nuanced than you're explaining it. I mean, take a rape victim. Many rape victims would never even step forward if they ever thought their name would get out there. Maybe that's wrong. They're victims, and they shouldn't be ashamed of having been the victim of a crime. But people are. It terrifies them. And when they,
You're the one who's wiping away the nuances. The policy is in many places and should be you ask, you talk to the person. I covered a trial in Akron where a doctor, a physician, had raped more than 100 women, and their names they wanted their names. Those 100 women came together.
That's different.
It was a crusade to catch. Yeah, but the newspapers did not print their names because their policy was, no, we don't print the names of rape victims. That was
I don't think that's policy at most newspapers.
Now. Yeah.
No, I think newspapers.
Not now, but it was when we began in the business. It's changed because of
If a woman steps forward, or if a victim steps forward and says, I am the victim of a crime, and identifies themselves publicly, that will get reported. I don't know what paper or media organization would suppress it in spite of that person's intention to go public. That's not the issue here. The issue is whether you make public information that people do not want public. And not every single bit of information that a reporter finds makes its way into a story. It doesn't have to. It's not regurgitation. It's judgment.
But the name, Mike? The name of the person?
Yes.
The biography
so
of the
should,
person?
We should start printing the names of... We should start printing the names of rape victims. Is that what you're saying? Just with
no,
or without
the
permission?
No, we're talking about mass murder.
But you brought up suicide and rape, and that
no,
I think
you,
that's
you,
the.
You always say that, Rosemary. Come on.
Okay.
Fess
All right.
Up.
So here, my view on the rape people, on the rape to women, is that it has evolved. As I said, when I started, I could not get a name in, even when women wanted them in. That has changed. That's much better. As for suicide victims, yes, I think their names should be in the paper in almost all circumstances. We have now a list, and the Times Union is one of them, that we don't print suicide people unless, and then here's the list, if they commit suicide in a prominent way, if they are famous, if they are connected to someone famous, or if it's just a really interesting story and we want to tell it. So the policy is whenever we want, we print it, and when we don't, we don't. And that's stupid. We should just print it all the time.
Hey, wait, that's the rule for just about every news story. You know, you decide what you're going to print. You got a finite amount of resource, finite amount of space, and you print what you think is the most interesting, the most compelling, the most urgent, the most public value to it. I mean, it's a judgment editors make all the time.
Okay, so then you agree with me, and then you agree with me.
No, I don't necessarily agree with you.
Blanket against it.
No. I think it's a decision that's made based on circumstances. If a woman steps forward and says, "I am the victim of a horrible crime, and I want to talk about it, and this is my name," that's very easy to make a decision. But if someone doesn't want to talk about it and is terrified at being raped again and terrified to testify against a suspect, then it makes no sense for me to expose that person to more harm.
We are really late for a break, but I just have a quick question for you, Rosemary. What about age? Minors excluded in this?
It was always a problem to me when we had a case of rape or incest, and we would hide the victim. We would hide the person's name because that would expose the person. Like if you rape your daughter, if you put your name in, then the father would expose the victim. And so the father got away with it. He committed possibly even a worse crime than rape, which was incest, and he would get free from public blame, which I think is part of the price that you pay when you commit a crime. So I don't have an answer. I don't mean to come off as a know-it-all, but I don't like the systems that we have in place now. I think they're really ineffective. And so I'm so totally opposed to protecting the names, which is what you're doing. What's the difference between protecting and leaving out, so you don't glorify it, the names of mass murderers?
Well, this may be a shocker to you all, but we have many, many letters on this subject. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll hear people out on what they have to say. And we'll do that right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A very spirited program today. And we welcome your letters. We have many, many, many. And we're going to go through them as quickly as we can. And if any of the panelists would like to chime in and respond, please do so. We go to Susan, who says, if publishing names taught us all so much, where is that learning? What reduction in rape, shooting, or other crimes has issued forth? Joan says the term the shooter dehumanizes the perpetrators of horrible crimes. Human beings, people, are committing these horrific acts. We need to emphasize that. Using dehumanizing terms absolves the rest of us human beings from any responsibility. Susan writes, regarding the debate over whether or not shooters are mentally ill, I want to add that there are many forms of mental illness and a broad spectrum of degrees, most of which don't result in murders. That doesn't mean murderers can't be or aren't also mentally ill.
I love that letter.
We go to Jean-Marc, who says, can we call white supremacy a mental illness? Can we discuss this all? Anyone want to touch that one?
Well, I think white supremacy is a mental illness, to be honest with you. It's judgment, you know, but it is so misguided that one wonders about the brains of the people who spout that stuff.
Well, it's also the result of people being indoctrinated at a young age and having it continued by so many aspects of our society, you know, both in houses of worship and in culture. That's the result. Now, they could be mentally deficient in that they don't discern, but some people are just fed so much that they lose sight of what reality is.
We go to Doreen, who says it is being reported that gun-toting Congresswoman Lauren Boebert of Colorado, just hours after the tragedy, sent out a fundraising email to supporters encouraging them to say hell no to any gun control that may be proposed. If Colorado residents aren't against guns, it seems they should not have elected this woman to represent them. Then we go to...
I believe that is my point. Colorado, which has had a horrible record with mass shootings, starting with Columbine, the first really publicized school shooting, elected her. What does that say? So all this other stuff about what the media does and what Congress does, it begins with voters putting in women like her.
Well, surely you understand that what the media does has a results in some way with who gets elected, right, Rosemary?
I don't think the media was responsible for her election, no.
Do you think in any way what the media puts in the paper about a candidate has to do with whether people are voting for them?
I can recall nothing in the Denver Post that extols her.
She was exposed for being... Yeah, no. I think Boebert was exposed for just what she is, and people went and elected her anyway. She's from a far western Colorado district, very far from the capital of Denver, and it's a very different culture out there. Like I said, it's the Wild West, and they elected her. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, right or wrong, but they elected her, and that's the way it works.
All right, more letters. We go back to Judy, who says, the polls show we want controls and the market shows we buy more guns. I agree with Rosemary. We do not act when children are shot. We do not act when our Congress people are shot. And why do you guys laugh when Rosemary is agitated? Well, I don't think we laugh just at Rosemary. I was actually getting a kick out of Mike getting all worked up, too, just for the record.
Well, I
go ahead.
I appreciate the comment. There is a tendency for people and women as well as men to be discomforted by strong-willed, outspoken women. I've seen it all my life. I'm not offended by it, and I will keep talking because I can hardly help but do otherwise.
We were also told that you weren't agitated. You were, because I think you were the one that used the term agitated, right? I don't think we did. I think you did. There was one letter writer who said Rosemary isn't agitated. She's Italian. So I don't know how to take that, but I'll.
That's very accurate. She obviously has sat through that. You should see our dinner conversations. They're terrifying to outsiders.
Okay, let's see. We go to...
I don't know, Rosemary. In my house, plates flew. Let me put it that way. And that wasn't Italian.
Jewish and Italian. They're right next together. That's true.
And Mike and I grew up in Catholic households where we just went into the corner and sucked our thumbs. Jade says, two observations. Please don't point out that a cop was killed as if his slash her life is more important than the others who were murdered. I think in this case, the reason that is because it's so far the only name that's been released. It's the only victim we know of. So,
and seven children has to have something to do with it.
Yeah.
The death of cops, however, is more important. And from a law point of view, that makes it a capital case.
Yeah, so and he was responding to it.
He was running into the gunfire. He has seven kids at home. He's running into the gunfire to protect others.
All right, let's
newsworthy.
Let's go back to
that's kind of amazing.
Here we go. I went back to Jade's letter because we didn't get to the second point. It's anger before mental illness that provokes violence. Angry white man syndrome, says Jade. Katie says, I agree with Rosemary. There are so many problems to solve, and in my mind, systemic racism is more violent than mass shootings. I am not suggesting one person means more that when they die or suffer. It is hard to stomach any innocent person being killed, be it by a bullet or by loss of opportunity, housing, education, food, or health care. I think the systemic racism in this country, which equals systemic inequality, needs to be at the center of all bold action that the Democratic majority must take. Virginia says, I believe that the House passed some gun control legislation like background checks. Please give Nancy Pelosi credit. Michelle says, this morning C-SPAN indicates that the Senate Judiciary Committee is having a hearing on reducing gun violence. We go to Mary Jo, who says, I wonder how we could get the anti-abortion folks to consider gun control as pro-life. Then this from Judy, FYI. Chuck Schumer sent me an email last night asking what my priorities are for the Congress's next task. Top of my list is gun control. Maybe he's putting feelers out to his constituents. Hope he is listening to us. Nicole says, in my lifetime, there has never been a more urgent reason to own guns than the neo-fascist Trump administration. Protection from, and that is italicized and asterisked, from government defies partisanship. Joan says, do you realize how difficult it is to find mental health care for patients who want these services? Extrapolating from my experience in a primary care practice, if the availability of care were tripled, it would still fall short. And this, it's important to note, would be for patients who are willing to participate in therapy. That is a great letter.
Go. And how many people, that is a great letter. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Mental health advocates must take a different stance than, oh, we're being battered unfairly. They have to say, no, we do need more treatment. How many of these people who have been involved in crimes might have been helped by counseling, free and available counseling and whatever else that might have been required? We just don't know.
Meanwhile, Tom writes, for Rosemary and others who believe likewise, ample research shows us that mental illness is not a salient risk factor in perpetrators of mass shootings. White, male, and angry are far more common risk factors among shooters, as is the history of domestic violence. It is a common refrain, but suggesting that mental illness is responsible for mass shootings serves to stigmatize mental illness and does nothing to improve gun violence. It's curious to me, writes Jay, how absent conversation about the NRA has been since the attack on the Capitol. I don't mean to generalize, but the people who marched on the Capitol are the same folks I'd see at the gun shows. And remember Maria Butina? What was she doing with all those same folks who fed the fire that led to that attack? Anyone on that? All right, we go to Debbie. Every time there is a mass shooting in this country, the predictable conversations about mental health and access to guns ensue. What we are not talking about is what is wrong with white men. Can you just imagine the conversations if the lion's share of mass shootings were perpetrated by, say, black or brown people instead of white men? The conversation wouldn't be about mental health or gun access. The conversation would be, what is wrong with them? White men are committing these crimes, yet officialdom doesn't talk about the frustrated white male entitlement at the root of these crimes. Until toxic masculinity and white entitlement are neutered, society will be plagued by this despicable violence.
And what does the word neutered mean in this case?
I would think eradicated, yes.
Well, you know, the fact is I'm a white male, and you've heard me talking for this entire show about the absence of gun control. So I think, you know, it's a little bit much to accuse all white malehood of taking the same stance. I strongly object.
It feels like a broad brush is being implied. I mean, a lot of men are white and a lot of white people are men and a lot of them get angry, but that doesn't all turn into violence against other people. It might just be, I'm really angry, you know, and it stops at that. And I'll deal with it. I'll take a chill pill. I'll just go outside and walk around in the beautiful weather. You know, it's beyond that.
Okay,
it's a subset.
I want to stand up for the letter writer.
Please.
I think she's making a strong point, and she's not indicting any of the white men who are speaking on this show, but the base that helped Donald Trump into office and keeps him strong, and the people who commit these crimes are indeed overwhelmingly angry white men who feel offended and put out in society right now. And it is a big issue. I just disagree with her that we're not discussing it. We're discussing it everywhere. Much of what she wrote in her letter I've read elsewhere.
Let's see. We go to, did I get to everyone? I think I got to everyone that I had, if I didn't, I accidentally deleted it. Okay, so let's move on to another topic, if you're all ready and willing to go there.
Ready.
All right, thank you. Let's talk about infrastructure funding. So here we go. The Biden team is preparing $3 trillion in new spending for the economy. Infrastructure is just one part of it. Education, workforce development, and fighting climate change, also part of this money, with the aim of making the economy more productive. The president's economic advisors are pulling together a sweeping $3 trillion package to boost the economy, reduce carbon emissions, and narrow economic inequality, beginning with a giant infrastructure plan that may be financed in part through tax increases on corporations and the rich. After months of internal debate, Mr. Biden's advisors are expected to present the spending proposal to the president and congressional leaders this week, as well as begin outreach to industry and labor groups. On Monday, Mr. Biden's national climate advisor, Gina McCarthy, discussed his infrastructure plans and their role in combating climate change in a meeting with oil and gas industry executives. Administration officials caution that details remain in flux, but the enormous scope of the proposal highlights the aggressive approach that the Biden administration wants to take as it tries to harness the power of the federal government to make the economy more equitable. All right, Alan.
Do it now or you're not going to get a chance. As Rosemary and others have pointed out on this show, I guess it was JP, come up with the idea that, you know, the Democratic majority is at stake in this next election, and it could well, if history is a guide, go against the Biden administration. So do it now. And it makes great sense to me to do that. I think there are some things in this proposed bill that I am so in favor of. One of them is free community college. It's a way of negating the kind of racial divide we have in this country. Everybody deserves a chance to go to high school, and everybody deserves a chance to go to some college. And I'm all for it. So I think it's a bold move. I think it's a great move, and I hope to see it.
JP.
I agree with Alan. You know, the multi-trillion dollar stimulus that was recently passed has, you know, something like a 70% approval among the American people. So if I'm the president, why not go back to the well and, you know, spend more money and get higher approval ratings? That sounds like a good playbook to me. I do think that there are a number of projects in New York that would be great to implement, including roads and bridges. And then the New York City Housing Authority down in New York City, you see those housing projects in New York City, they could sorely use an update. But the big question for me is, what is Joe Manchin going to think about this $3 trillion infrastructure proposal? And what's it going to take to get his vote? Is he going to curtail it? Is he going to demand projects for his state? Because how I look at it, it's very hard to pass anything without Joe Manchin's support. Mm.
You know, Great Barrington has a lot of bad bridges, too. Almost everything is down. And, this is a countrywide crisis, and it needs to be done. And I think people get that.
Rosemary.
Okay, this is a really interesting bill to me. I think, unlike Obama, who thought of himself and got us to think of him as transformational, it may turn out to be Joe Biden. If he can get the bill he already did on coming back, recovery from COVID, and gets this, he will have transformed America, and that's amazing. Getting it passed, however, is going to be an effort, because while everyone does need bridges and we do need road repair, not everyone is convinced that community college education should be free, for example. The whole idea of investing in humans, which is everywhere in this bill, part of the huge cost of it, is not Republican doctrine. In fact, they hate it. They hate everything about it. They see it as progressive, giving away free stuff. And it will be fought tooth and nail. So it's going to be really interesting in the next few weeks to see how Biden decides to piece this out. Is he going to go push it all the way through the way he did the COVID recovery bill? Or will he break it into pieces and do infrastructure and then human investments? Will he try to negotiate and talk with and come to compromise with the Republicans? Or will he go the one vote margin route and try to push it all through? I think this is going to be an amazing time in the U.S. Congress right now, and I'm rooting for him.
Alan?
Yeah, well, you know, there's something else that we're not talking about here that has been in the news marginally, but it's been in the news, which is the resurrection of member items. Now, I'd love to hear what JP has to say about this as a real big expert on this. But member items basically allows Republicans to get things in their districts that they desperately need. And the theory here is, what'd you say? Pork. Yeah, well, it's pork, all right. But in Great Barrington, the selectmen are not doing their jobs the way they should. And in fact, we have all these broken bridges. So if Richie Neal, who is our congressman, goes out and says, okay, I want bridges for Great Barrington, it answers the concerns of everybody who lives in the town and around the town. So there is the pork is it can be a terrible thing. You're quite right. But on the other hand, it can also answer an awful lot of questions about why can't we fix these stupid bridges?
It's really a smart idea to go after infrastructure, because if you put it off, it just is going to it's still going to need to be fixed. It'll be a lot more expensive. So doing it preemptively creates jobs. It helps the economy. By allowing earmarks, again, the Democrats are beginning to open the door on these earmarks and member item type things so that you can get Republican Congress members to buy in. And Joe Manchin,
right.
You know, he should be looking for some of this green energy spending. You know, they want to build infrastructure for the electric cars. They want to build it for sustainable energy systems. Why not get some of that for West Virginia to help replace the jobs lost by the coal mines being closed down? You know, so everybody will be in there. It'll be a lot of negotiation, but this has potential to pull in some bipartisanship, and that would be a good thing.
Rosemary?
Well, McConnell is already poo-pooing any notion of bipartisanship, which would help Biden doubly, both as a, you know, a real leader who brings people together and as someone getting through all the Democratic ideals. So I think it's a little bit harder than we are making it. We look kind of starry-eyed at it. I think anything that involves a tax cut, tax increase or cutting down the reductions that the Republicans put into place, for example, taxing people who make more than $400,000 more in order to help pay for this will be fought bitterly by Republicans. And I'm thinking that this is going to be just like the COVID Recovery Act. It's going to pass on Democratic votes only. I'm okay with that, but I don't see a real hope for bipartisanship here. And then they have to defend themselves against why they're against better roads and bridges, which is cool.
But especially because there's a huge Senate election coming up with a divided Senate. And if McConnell allows any kind of cooperation, that hurts his ability to get people elected.
J.P. Miller.
Alan, you mentioned the earmarks. You know,
40 seconds.
One of the most amazing things is that the Republican conference just recently voted to accept and allow earmarks. The Republicans in Congress says, well, sure. we want to get back to the pork trough. And it was I tried to look up who voted for it, and it was a secret vote. None of them want to admit that they voted for the earmarks and the pork, but they voted for it, all right. They're right in there, ready to enjoy.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and have our last go-round with our terrific panel this morning. We welcome your input, panel at wamc.org. We will be back after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, and Mike Spain making up our group this morning. Let's move on to other topics, and I'd like to talk about the I'm fascinated on this Iowa race, so let's spend a moment on that. Which is resistance growing in both parties to Democratic probe of narrow Iowa race. House Democratic leaders are facing increased resistance from key members of both parties to an investigation into whether the results of an Iowa congressional race won narrowly by a Republican can be overturned by Congress. Several moderate House Democrats on Monday expressed opposition to or discomfort with Congress taking any action regarding the race. Their statements came after 9 of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach former President Donald Trump over his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol sent House Speaker Nancy Pelosi a letter asking her to call off the investigation, warning it could further erode voters' confidence in the electoral system. This was a race that was won, I believe, by 6 votes at last count. 6 votes. It was the outcome of Iowa's 2nd District, where Republican Marionette, I believe that is her name. Yes? Is there anyone going to... Marionette Miller Meeks was declared the winner over Democrat Rita Hart following a recount in November with a difference of just 6 votes out of 400,000 cast. Miller Meeks is now serving as the district's representative, but Hart has asked the House to overturn the result. What a sticky wicket, Alan.
That's exactly right. Here's the reason the Democrats don't like it, or the ones who are being vocal about it, because they're thinking what they might do in that case, they might do to me also. So stay out of it and stop calling off races that are won by 6 votes. We've had them right here in our own area. Certainly in the Utica area, it's happened, and not this time, but
Tenney
it has
race,
happened.
Yeah,
it has happened before. You know, what it does is it opens up a whole bunch of people to having their elections taken away from them.
Alan, I just need you a little closer to the mic.
And no, I did a bad thing. Now
okay.
That should be
there.
Better,
you go.
Right?
Okay.
I didn't
better.
Turn up the knob the way I should.
All right,
sorry,
I gotcha. That's okay. Yeah. Fine.
Yeah. So it's not hard to understand where all of these people are coming from, and I get it. Now, if you're Nancy Pelosi, and it looks like your lead in the House of Representatives is slowly being diminished, you might want to grab at this straw.
J.P. Miller.
I wouldn't go near it with a 1,000-foot pole to have Congress reverse the state certified winner of the election. It's a slippery slope. I can't imagine that Speaker Pelosi is going to touch this.
Mike Spain.
I agree with JP. It's toxic. You can't have Congress undoing what a local jurisdiction has determined to be the outcome of an election. If there's something fishy about the election, point a light on it, you know, push for reform. But if the Congress is going to undo what states do, that's essentially what the Stop the Steal movement wanted Congress to do. They wanted them to ignore the outcome of states' electoral votes and make Trump president for another term. I mean, nobody wants to go near that. Even Liz Cheney, who acknowledges that that's exactly what would be taken from it. You know, people... That Congress should keep their hands out of local elections, do things to reform the electoral process and maintain the election laws. But, this is toxic.
Rosemary Armeo.
Don't disagree. I don't want Congress anywhere near elections. It's a state matter, and we've done well with that. It also goes against Trump, which, of course, I love. And Pelosi, I think she's smart enough and will do this. She needs to start working more with those 10 Republican representatives who voted in favor of impeachment. These are people who can work with Democrats. I think she ought to make sure that they know that she is listening to them and doing what they want. And maybe you can work with us down the road. This is how bipartisanship and compromise works. It is infuriating to have lost a seat by 6 votes. But if it's only 6 votes, that's a very vulnerable seat. She ought to also be pouring money into that district to win it the next time.
So speaking of Stop the Steal, and this is one of my favorite stories after the last over the past 24 hours, that right-wing lawyer Sidney Powell is claiming in a new court filing that reasonable people wouldn't have believed as fact her assertions of fraud after the 2020 presidential election. The election infrastructure company Dominion Voting Systems sued Powell for defamation after she pushed lawsuits and made appearances in conservative media on behalf of President Donald Trump to sow doubt about the 2020 election results. Dominion claims that Powell knew her election fraud accusations were false and hurtful to the company. In a new court filing, Powell's attorneys write that she was sharing her opinion and that the public could reach their own conclusions about whether votes were changed by election machines. Given the highly charged and political context of the statements, it is clear that Powell was describing the facts on which she based the lawsuits she filed in support of President Trump. That, according to Powell's defense lawyer, your head can now explode. Go ahead.
Ridiculous.
Cheapers.
It's ridiculous. And you'd never have a defamation suit. I mean, if you say it, if you write it, if you, you know, there's libel, there's defamation, or there's just all of that stuff. You know, she said it. She knows she said it. And now she gives the lamest excuse that she can possibly, that I think she could possibly come up with.
No reasonable person would believe. You're right. We did, you're absolutely right. No reasonable person did believe it. Mike.
I think just that the it's creative. It's a very creative defense. And I hand it to her defense lawyer for coming up with it, because she really has nothing to stand on.
I didn't realize we were giving creativity points for civil litigation. That is good. Yeah. Rosemary?
Well, it makes me sad. This is very similar to Sarah Huckabee saying, you know, yeah, I lie to reporters, but there's nothing in the law that says I can't lie to reporters. So what? And everyone applauded her. By everyone, I mean Republicans applauded her. And now she's a viable gubernatorial candidate. And this is a woman who is, how cynical, how hypocritical this is. And yet she will be applauded as a clever lawyer, and she'll continue to do work. And probably she could even get off with this kind of a defense, because she's right. No reasonable person could believe it.
JP.
In the end, I think that doesn't it show that even one of Trump's like last defenders on this says that it was bogus?
Sure. She's saying we all, you should have known it was bogus. You're quite right.
That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. But you take it differently, Rosemary.
I mean, I think that reasonable people would agree with what JP said, but we're not talking about reasonable people. We're talking about the Republican base. They're not, if they even know about this at all, it's going to be like, oh, that's clever. Yeah, she had to say that.
And how about Republican judges who've been appointed?
Great point.
Who it may get to, and it may even get to the Supreme Court.
No, actually. Actually, I don't know about the judges. They have proved in the past couple of months during the Stop the Steal effort to have been very true to the law, and I hope that that will continue.
Hope is the right word.
Absolutely. So we have about 5.5 minutes, and we'll end with this story this morning. The Justice Department officials have reviewed potential sedition charges against members of the Oath Keepers militia group who attacked the Capitol on January 6th. They have been weighing whether to file them for weeks, according to law enforcement officials briefed on the deliberations. The group members were indicted last month on charges of conspiring to obstruct Congress's ability to certify the Electoral College victory of Joe Biden, then the president-elect. The Justice Department has rarely brought charges of sedition, the crimes of conspiring to overthrow the government, and has not successfully prosecuted such a case in more than 20 years. The decision about how to move forward has languished while Justice Department leaders go through the Senate confirmation process. The new Attorney General, Merrick Garland, was sworn in on March 11th and is likely to have final say over such a high-profile case. Alan, I guess this is a question of should they and will they are two different questions.
Well, they damn well should. No question about it. They should indict these people on sedition charges. But the chances of having a successful trial are somewhat nebulous, I think. But certainly they were seditious in what they were doing. And then there's the question of what Joe Biden wants. He said he didn't want to go after Trump after the election. Now it's after the election. And here are the Trump supporters, and they've clearly engaged in this kind of behavior, as has Trump, by the way. But go prove it.
Rosemary?
Well, it isn't Trump exactly that they're going after. It's people under him. And we in this country don't have any problem absolving the high-end people and going after the low ones. So I don't see that as an issue. I do think they should be charged with sedition. And I hope the best lawyers are on the case to prove it, because this was a horrific event. And Republicans are actively trying to rewrite history into something less scary, less onerous than it really was. So I am in favor of it. And also, I want to root for Merrick Garland. Come on and show your stuff right in this.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it is definitely an effort right now for Republicans to downplay what happened on January 6th and make it just seem like some overzealous people got out of hand. When there's compelling evidence that the Oath Keepers planned this as a paramilitary exercise. You can see it when they're kind of behaving in a military fashion, cutting through the crowd into the Capitol. And that needs to be demonstrated. And I'm also intrigued by the repeated connections that are being identified between the Oath Keepers prior to January 6th and Roger Stone, the president's close advisor. Mm. Now, Stone was granted a pardon, but this might be another way to go after him if they could get him connected to this conspiracy to obstruct the United States government. That would be a very, very interesting twist.
This has been brought up many times, of course, but throughout these investigations, the name of Roger Stone continues to be brought up again and again and again. JP.
I agree with Rosemary, Mike, and Alan. I hope these people are brought to justice to the fullest extent of the law. And what I find fascinating is I keep reading that there are a number of people that perpetrated those acts that they haven't caught yet.
Yes.
And this is an example, Rosemary, where I think that they should be publishing those people's photographs in the media and names so that they can try to capture them.
I think they have been, haven't they?
They have been, yes.
Yeah. All right.
It's been all over social media for sure. Yeah.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. And I know. But we'll do
this
it again.
This show should be an hour.
We'll do
it's a joke, folks. Okay, forget it.
We're going to go back for it. Yeah. So.
No, because that's what we say at the end of the media project.
Oh, I see. That's good. All right. So I want to thank everybody for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another go-around with, Rosemary will be back, at least. And we'll talk to the rest of you. And Alan, of course, will be back. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you to Rosemary and to JP and Mike, as always. Coming up next, we have the Congressional Corner. We'll be right back after this.